But now, on BBC Radio 4, a highly improbable Second World War espionage adventure featuring a highly improbable spy with the talent to amuse.
Whitehall, 255.
This is Diplomat speaking.
Who?
Diplomat. I've interviewed Lyon and established successful contact with Glory, but I've not yet been able to contact Triumph, although I did have a charming interview with his chef du cabinet, whose name I am unable to divulge as we haven't got a code name.
What the bloody hell are you talking about?
This is Diplomat. I have interviewed Lyon and established successful contact with Glory, but I've not yet been able to contact Triumph.
No good, old boy. I can't understand a word.
Diplomat, me, Noel Coward, Lyon, Sir Eric Phipps, the British ambassador in Paris, Glory, Jean Giraudoux, dramatist and French minister of intelligence.
Did you say Noel Coward? There's a message for you. They want you to go to America.
America? But I finally managed to organise the Paris...
Forget Paris, old boy. Get yourself to New York as soon as you can. Check into room 603 at the St. Regis. Keep your eyes and ears open. Isolationism. Anti-British feeling. Enemy agents.
But what exactly...
Don't worry. We'll be in touch.
Blithe Spy by Marcy Cahan. A highly improbable espionage adventure, starring Malcolm Sinclair as Noel Coward, Eleanor Braun as his devoted secretary, Lorne Lorraine, Elizabeth McGovern as his devoted friend, the American painter, Nasa McMain, and Bob Sherman as Franklin Delano Roosevelt.
Midnight.
Very big, the North Atlantic.
I can't sleep. I keep dreaming I'm in the garden at Goldenhurst. It's high summer, the poplars are swaying, the bees are buzzing. And the buzzing turns into a German U-boat cutting through the zinnias, and I wake up in a panic.
I promise you, Lorne, if I spot any zinnias out there, you'll be the first to know.
Are you all right?
Fine. I just wish someone had found the time to brief me before we left London.
I don't suppose you can tell me, even vaguely, what it is you're being briefed on.
So far, it's all been highly secret, indisputably confidential, and deadly dull.
I always thought you'd be a terrific spy.
Not so loud. There may be a German sub down there hanging on our every word.
In that case, I wish to state that sauerkraut is vile, lederhosen revolting, and their much vaunted beer overrated.
What do you think of those blonde fellows at our table?
The Scandinavian diplomats.
They never speak.
Well, they speak to me. One of them asked me to play ping-pong this morning.
Did you?
Don't be ridiculous.
Lorne, you must play ping-pong with them. Find out if they're really Scandinavian.
You mean trick questions about Strindberg?
Now begin with Ibsen, an offhand joke about Peer Gynt.
By the time I thought of one, we'll have docked in New York. Someone's coming.
They've obviously thought better of it.
Why do I have the impression you're waiting for someone?
If you must know, there's a wonderful specimen of rugged masculinity who's been casting inquiring glances in my direction ever since we embarked.
Who?
You've been too busy not playing ping-pong to notice.
Not the handsome young beanpole in the tartan shirt who does nothing but read War and Peace.
He looks up occasionally when he turns the pages.
And I assumed you were up here night after night, brooding over the fate of your beloved homeland.
Someday I'll find you, moonlight behind you, true to the dream I am.
That's my cue for bed.
Sleep like seven, darling. As I draw near you, you'll smile a little smile for a little while.
We shall stand hand in hand. Excuse me for lurking. I didn't want to intrude.
My secretary is suffering from insomnia.
The bar's deserted. Perhaps a nightcap?
No perhaps about it.
My name is Noel, by the way.
I know who you are. I've been meaning to talk to you since the voyage began.
Why didn't you? I'm terrifically accessible.
The fact is,
I think I've read everything you've written. All the plays, short stories, your autobiography. I know every one of your songs by heart.
It's always wise to keep abreast of the classics. Cigarette?
Well, thanks. I couldn't trust myself not to gush.
My dear boy, gush away.
I imagine you have a lot on your mind, what with the war and everything.
You imagine correctly. Are you on your way home?
Montreal. I've been doing what they used to call the Grand Tour.
Shuffling in and out of churches. Putting a crick in your neck, gazing up at statues.
It wasn't as bad as all that. The thing about Europe, it's so...
So amazingly European. I'm sorry, I shouldn't mock you. On my first trip to Paris, I was up the Eiffel Tower within minutes.
I recited Wordsworth on Westminster Bridge, went round Amsterdam on a barge, blew half my budget at a nightclub in Berlin.
Now, tell me about the nightclub.
There were these girls there, really, you know, well-built girls. In fact, I could have sworn they were girls.
It's far better to assume nothing and enjoy everything.
Maybe if you'd been there, I wouldn't have made such a cracking fool of myself.
Go on.
I asked one of the girls to dance. So we're dancing, and she says, "Ah, mein Schatz, do you have a room where we can make love?" And I say, "Make what?"
"Love."
"Oh, love. That's when I noticed she had, well, stubble. I paid what seemed like a million Deutschmarks to get myself out of there."
"Had I been there, I would have insisted that you dance exclusively with me."
"Seriously?"
"I'm a very good dancer."
"No, I didn't mean... I imagine you do everything superbly."
"The first moment I saw you on the promenade deck, I knew we were destined to be great friends."
"Gosh."
"Have some more brandy."
"Thanks."
"It's good that you were able to see a little of the continent before the ghastliness descended."
"I had a glimpse of the ghastliness. A run-in with some Nazi Boy Scouts in Vienna."
"I hope you gave as good as you got."
"Outnumbered 5-1. I was lucky to escape with my life."
"Will you join up when you get back to Canada?"
"Oh, I'd like to. It'll be good experience. I've started writing plays."
"Oh dear, oh dear, oh dear."
"I'm boring you."
"Not yet. Tell me a little about your work."
"Oh, they're serious dramas mostly. With an international dimension. One has been optioned by the Theatre Guild in New York."
"We all have to start somewhere."
"There are problems with the third act."
"Keep it brisk, witty, and relevant."
"Easier said than done. Perhaps you could take a look at it. The third act?"
"It might be even more helpful if I could read the whole play."
"I'm not sure I can show you the whole play."
"Oh, the Theatre Guild won't mind."
"The backstage men might."
"Oh, I doubt the stagehands would object."
"I mean, the Baker Street Irregulars."
"Indeed."
"They would prefer us to focus our attention on Act 3.
"Well, well, well. The third act, then. Do you have it with you?"
"I could show it to you in New York. Where are you staying?"
"It might be better if I contacted you." "It's only a steward. Where can I reach you?"
"Seriously, Mr. Coward, I'm your biggest fan."
"You haven't told me your name."
"Now, I really mustn't take up any more of your time. Good night, sir."
"Sleep well, dear boy."
"I travel alone. Sometimes I'm east, sometimes I'm west. No chains can ever bind me. No remembered love can ever find me."
"No matter how often I see that skyline, it never ceases to thrill me."
"London suddenly seems very far away."
3,000 miles, they tell me.
"Oh, you know what I mean. Look at it. A huge, shining city. No air raid sirens, no gas masks.
Wrapped in cellophane, preserving every vitamin intact. You haven't spotted my friend in the tartan shirt, have you?"
"Not for several days now."
"Strange. He couldn't have disembarked in mid-Atlantic."
"Well, perhaps he was taken ill."
"I don't think so. One of my colleagues in Paris used to warn me, if an Englishman tells you he's a spy, he's probably lying. If an American tells you he's a spy, he's probably telling the truth."
"What about your friend in the tartan shirt?"
"Canadian."
"Can you see Nessa down there?"
"Darling, Nessa is invariably late. But here come the ladies and gentlemen of the press."
"Welcome to New York, Mr. Coward."
"Thank you. It's always a pleasure to be here."
"Are you relieved to be away from the bombs?"
"The bombardment hasn't quite started yet. When it does, I look forward to resisting it in my native land."
What's the purpose of your visit, Mr. Coward?
Theatrical. I've written two new plays. I'm here to discuss them with my American representatives. My secretary, Mrs. Lorne Lorraine...
Good morning.
...is here to arrange for the evacuation of 68 children under the age of 15 from the British Actors' Orphanage, of which I am president.
Is Britain finished, Mr. Coward?
On the contrary, we've hardly started. Our government is resolute and focused.
What about ordinary Londoners?
Quietly indefatigable.
Are you here to tell the American people that we should get involved in a foreign war?
It will be presumptuous of me to tell Americans anything, but all decent people deplore what is happening in continental Europe.
In other words, Americans who put America first aren't decent?
What an extraordinary thought.
Now, wait a second. Are you trying to say...
Please excuse us. Our chauffeur has finally arrived.
I feel I know you already, Lorne. I've read all about you, in present indicative. You're quiet, witty, authoritative, and Noel can't function without you.
And I've read all about you in present indicative, Nasa. You're always painting, even in the middle of your own parties. You're beautiful, untidy, with a unique talent for living.
And I've read all about me in present indicative. I'm sick to death of me. Come on, Nasa, bring me up to date.
Alfred and Lynn are opening tonight in Bob Sherwood's new play. They want you at the dress rehearsal this afternoon. Alfred's sick with worry.
Alfred is always sick with worry at dress rehearsals. I shall steer well clear of him until this evening.
Jack and Natasha have booked a table at 21 for 6. Moss Hart's written a new play about his psychiatrist. He wants to read it to you as soon as possible. Gertie Lawrence is playing the lead.
Has Gertie said yes?
Not exactly.
Poor Mossy.
Gertie's fallen desperately in love.
Gertie is always falling desperately in love.
This time it's serious. He's a Yankee banker with his own theater in Cape Cod.
He has my total sympathy.
I haven't heard from Larry and Vivian. They've had stinking reviews for Romeo and Juliet, so I expect they're lying low. But Alex sends his love. He's looking forward to bankrupting you at backgammon.
Our reassuring that as Europe collapses into chaos and barbarity, the New York theatrical scene remains embalmed in anguish, butchery, and intrigue.
Newell, there's the Canadian from the ship.
Where?
In the taxi behind us.
Which taxi?
It's vanished. He was right behind us.
Damn.
Friend of yours?
It's not important, darling. How fast can you get us to the St. Regis?
Set your stopwatches now.
Come in, Lorne.
What's your room like?
Very grand. A message from Fanny Holtzman. She may have found a home for the orphanage children.
Splendid.
Oh, it's like a steam bath in here.
Open some windows. All New York interiors are overheated.
Goodness. Is that safe?
All New York radiators behave convulsively. Pay no attention.
Fanny says she's free now if you want to meet at her office.
You go ahead. I have a more pressing engagement.
They've been in touch then?
Yes, finally. I don't know how long I'll be. If anyone asks where I am, tell them I'm at the dentist.
Fine. See you later.
Oh, no. Don't look so worried. This is Manhattan, not Warsaw.
You must take the A train to go to Sugar Hill way up in Harlem. If you miss the A train, you'll find you've missed the quickest way to Harlem.
Well done. You found us.
I've been coming up here since the 20s. The Cotton Club.
Of course. The dear old Cotton Club. I'm Fortnum.
I'm Simpson.
In that case, I'm Marshall and Snellgrove.
Well spotted. We hope you won't mind being Selfridge.
Not at all.
Whiskey.
Thanks.
Simpson.
We're sorry to have diverted you from Paris.
To be honest, I could never figure out what I was supposed to be doing in Paris.
But you had some success.
Well, I shut down Fécamp.
Fécamp?
The commercial radio station at Fécamp. It was blasting away day and night. I realized that its signals could provide cross-bearings for enemy aircraft.
You're kidding.
It was outrageous. Anyway, they are no longer broadcasting.
Did you get anywhere with propaganda?
Not really. We had the RAF bombard the German landscape with translated copies of Mr. Chamberlain's speeches. Most effective if our objective was to bore the enemy to death.
Oh, come on, you're being modest.
No, really, that was as far as I got. The boys in Whitehall dismissed my best idea. The sticky confetti is too frivolous.
The sticky confetti.
The Germans kept boasting that the RAF had never flown over Berlin. I suggested we deluge the city with specially made sticky confetti with the Union Jack on one side and the tricolour on the other.
I think we can offer you something more compelling than confetti.
Excellent.
We've had word that a top-level German agent has recently entered the country with plans to sabotage some of the key West Coast ports serving British shipping.
We believe the man planning this infiltration may be a double agent, quite happy to betray the fascists.
He may have been a passenger on your ship.
The third act.
Third act?
A Canadian approached me in the middle of the voyage. Late 20s, 6'2", rather Raymond Messier-ish. He was posing as a stage-struck admirer, claimed to have written a play, wanted me to look at his third act. He, implied he was on our side.
What was his name?
The purser informed me he was sailing as Jonathan Smith.
That figures.
The fellow was nervous, but fundamentally decent. He had me convinced he was a true blue Canadian.
Do you know how to get in touch with him?
He said he would be in touch with me. Then he disappeared until the end of the voyage. My secretary spotted him this morning in a taxi behind us on 48th Street.
Good. He's nervous but eager. The next time he makes contact, don't let him go until he hands over that third act.
Use every persuasive trick in your dramatist's repertoire.
What if he demands money?
Then give him some. Here. $5,000.
Is that the going rate for secret sabotage plans?
If I were you, I'd start the bidding at 500.
Try to find out where he's staying. We don't want to lose track of him.
Right. How do I get in touch with you?
Call this number. What codes have you been using?
Nothing numerical. I have difficulty adding up a bezique score.
A book code, then?
Not exactly. I've invented my own code based on a game I play with my friends. I'm afraid it's somewhat arcane.
Surely, that's the point, if it's a code.
That's how I feel. Now, let's say I ring you and hum this.
Chopin.
Excellent. Now, when did Chopin die?
Sometime during the last century.
1849. Now, what other great event occurred in 1849? You should know this, Simpson. 1849, up in the Klondike.
My mind is a blank.
The Gold Rush. Now, who directed and starred in the Gold Rush?
Charlie Chaplin.
Precisely. So when I hum, you know instantly that the man I mean is Chaplin.
Tell you what, old chap, forget about codes. Our men will tail you. Do you know your schedule for the next 12 hours?
I'll be at 21 from 6 p.m, going on to Robert Sherwood's new play at the Belasco Theatre at 8:30, then a party at Nathan McMain's studio, 131 East 66th Street.
131 East 66th, got it.
In the meantime, just be yourself. Cosmopolitan English playwright gadding about Manhattan.
I shall give it my best shot. Yes, I congratulate you. The same ambiance of crushed celebrity and pickled sycophant as your old studio on 57th Street.
Thank you, darling. Who are these people?
No, darling. How are you? It's been too long.
Hello, Nunu. Horace.
You poor dear. What you must have been going through.
Oh, they haven't sent any bombs over yet, though God knows it's a matter of weeks.
Bombs?
Britain is at war with Germany, Horace. Perhaps you hadn't heard.
We meant your root canal. You're not frozen, are you, darling?
He doesn't look frozen.
Noel, the truth. What do you really think of Bob's play?
Very moving. Alfred and Nin on the top of their form.
But so depressing, darling. I mean, Nazis in Finland. It's time you gave us something effervescent, Noel.
Oh, I doubt I'll be writing anything, effervescent or otherwise, for the duration.
Don't tell me you've turned into one of those whining old Britishers trying to drag us into saving your empire for you.
I'm not sure I would have phrased it as gracefully as that, Horace, but as a matter of fact, you're already in this war, whether you like it or not.
I haven't noticed Germany declaring war on us, have you, Nunu?
Germany has been monotonously declaring peace on everyone since 1936. Most comforting.
Listen, I have a friend who was at Harvard with your ambassador, Kennedy.
He's your ambassador, Horace, and he has the guts of a prawn cocktail.
You mustn't mind Horace, Noel. It's the economy. It's giving him ulcers.
Really? I thought your economy was improving.
Well, think again. If Vladimir Ilyich Roosevelt gets in for a third term, hard-working plutocrats like me will be out of business.
You must excuse me. My secretary beckons.
Noel, how's the tooth?
I'll survive, Oscar.
I've got some sodium pentobarbital.
I'm sure you have, Oscar.
Noel.
Oh, no.
Lorne, have you taken out an ad in the Times? I can't walk two steps without some well-wisher interrogating me on my root canal. Oh,
Americans are obsessed with teeth. I told Jack that you were at the dentist. He told Alec. Alec wanted to know what was wrong. I said a tiny abscess. Moss Hart said there is no such thing as a tiny abscess. It means root canal. Then Edna Furman...
Tell them I have a temperamental bicuspid. Here comes Moss, Jack, Natasha, Alfred, Lynn, Bob, Alec, Ira, Edna, George. Oh, and that Ziegfeld girl with the terrifying fingernails whose name I can never remember.
Noel? Is your tooth bothering you?
The tooth is fine, Nessa.
Lauren's gone back to the hotel. She says she could use an early-ish night.
Dear Lorne likes nothing better than bedtime at 10 with a cup of Horlicks and a volume of Jane Austen.
Really? Let's try that sometime. All the years I've known you, you've never taken refuge from a party on the fire escape.
Oh dear, the first sign of middle age.
You'll never be middle-aged, my darling. You'll always be the same sophisticated Peter Pan who came waltzing into the old studio on 57th Street.
My first time in New York.
You've always loved New York.
I had $25 to my name. All the theater managers were out of town for the summer. I miss my dear old mother.
Fortunately, you found your way to 57th Street.
You gave me a corned beef sandwich and a dill pickle, and I was yours for life.
You're not in love with New York this evening.
What makes you say that, Nessa?
Been watching you. Don't worry, it's not obvious. You've been smiling and saying witty things and playing the piano, but something's not right.
I used to think I understood Americans. My English friends would argue that you were all profoundly shallow, but I'd say no. We speak the same language, give or take the odd clerk or migraine. We believe in the same things. We'd fight to preserve the same values.
But now that Britain's at war and we're not, you're not so sure.
I mustn't generalize. Most of my New York friends are loyal interventionists.
Most of your New York friends are Jews, darling.
This war isn't about narrow self-interest. The fascists intend to enslave every man, woman, child of us. What's at stake is nothing less than the future of mankind.
I understand that, Noel. But a greengrocer in Quincy, Illinois, or a farmer plowing his land in Omaha has a hard time imagining a Nazi platoon marching up to his front porch.
Aeroplanes dropping bombs, Nessa. And there's talk of even bigger bombs that can destroy an entire city at one go.
It's no use feeling hopeless about isolationism. You're the most articulate man I know. If you can't convince my fellow countrymen to join you, nobody can.
I think so.
I know so.
Remember me in the old days? The socialists accused me of trying to engineer a Tory victory by writing cavalcade. I was so busy rehearsing cavalcade, I hadn't even noticed they declared an election.
I hope you don't mean that Peter Pan is growing up.
Anything but that. Thank you for listening, darling.
Shall we rejoin the dance?
Delighted, Lady Agatha.
Nessa, who's the tall young man near the door?
I've never seen him before. Someone must have brought him. Oh, he's gone.
Good night, my darling. Tomorrow, sleep well.
Yes.
Stop or I'll shoot.
What makes you think I'd mind being shot by a Cartier cigarette lighter?
It's a Dunhill. They're much more lethal.
Why did you disappear? I was looking forward to massacring you at shuffleboard.
My cabin had been searched. I locked myself in for the rest of the voyage.
I met some people this afternoon who can help you with your third act.
Are they specialists?
The best in the business.
There isn't a lot of time. We start rehearsals the day after tomorrow.
Better leave it with me, then. I've been improving third act since 1924.
I don't have it with me.
I'm free for a nightcap. Why don't we go back to your place?
That's not possible.
Do you live far? We can take a cab.
We might be followed.
I know how to shake them off.
I'd feel safer in daylight.
Do you know many people in New York? It's a lonely city, don't you find, without companions?
All I care about now is the third act.
A consummate professional. I applaud you. If you show it to me tonight, we could iron all the kinks out by the morning.
Look, I'm a novice at this. I just want to make sure it gets into the right hands.
We can make it worth your while.
What do you mean?
I'll explain further when we get to your place.
You think I'm angling for money?
I'm not condemning you. We all have to live.
I'm not doing this for cash. I care about what happens to the world.
I was hoping you'd say that.
It's not safe here.
That's how I feel. Let's find a taxi.
I can show it to you tomorrow.
Sorry, dear boy. Otherwise engaged. This is your only opportunity.
Meet me at 12 noon. The Oyster Bar. Grand Central Station. Don't bring anyone with you.
It's late. Let me get you a taxi.
No. Don't follow me. Good night.
Wait. I'm at the St. Regis. I'm breakfasting with Moss Hart at Sutton Place from 9 a.m. tomorrow. Here's the number.
Thanks. I wasn't kidding, you know. I really am your biggest fan.
I believe you.
Yes.
This is Selfridge. A tale by Cole Porter. She should have died hereafter. There would have been a time for such a word. 12 noon. Da da.
What?
A tale by Cole Porter.
Have you got the plans?
It's under control.
No! You, Noel! Thank you. Thank you very much.
Morning. What are you doing here?
I'm meeting Fanny Holtzman. We're taking the train up the Hudson to look at a residence for the orphans. Have you seen Moss? How's the new play?
He read it to me. It's terrific.
Now you have to convince Gertie to say yes.
Lorne, I can't chat now. I'm on my way to a tango lesson.
Oh, of course, darling. I was just getting something to eat on the train.
Hasta la vista.
No. Is that the Canadian from the Shear?
Keep looking at me. Pretend you haven't seen him.
No. In the paper. Look, his photograph. Jonathan Smith, a 28-year-old Canadian citizen, was knocked down at the corner of Lexington Avenue and 67th Street last night in the third of a recent spate of midtown hit-and-run accidents.
Mr. Smith, an aspiring playwright who was visiting New York after a European tour, never regained consciousness.
Oh, the poor man. I keep reminding myself to look both ways.
Canadians drive on the right, Lorne.
I know that. Well, at least I think I knew that.
See you later. My love to Fanny.
Who is it?
Selfridge.
Just a minute. What are you doing here? It's not safe.
It's doubtful I was followed. I had a martini at the Plaza, took a taxi to Battery Park, hopped on a bus up Broadway to Sardi's, ordered a sirloin steak and a baked potato, took 2 bites of each, chatted to the Lunts, ducked out via the kitchen, walked east to Fifth Avenue and caught a taxi up here.
Have you got the plans?
I'm afraid not. Have you seen this?
We've seen it. Mr. Smith is in enemy hands if he's not already dead.
So it's unlikely this could have been a genuine accident.
If it was, our Canadian friend was a spectacularly unlucky double agent.
Were you watching us last night?
Our men drove down the street. You were deep in conversation. The second time we turned the corner, you'd both vanished.
He was jumping out of his skin with nerves, insisted we meet in daylight. That's why I called you.
Your message was impenetrable. A tale by Cole Porter.
The tale of the oyster. The Oyster Bar. She should have died hereafter. There would have been a time for such a word. Macbeth. The next word in the text is tomorrow. 12 noon, not in code.
The Oyster Bar, 12 noon, tomorrow.
Precisely. It's not in the least complicated.
What about the humming?
Thou witty, thou sweet, thou grand.
Grand Central Station.
We're on the same wavelength at last. Unfortunately, Jonathan Smith never made it to Grand Central Station at noon.
Never mind. You did your best.
What do we do now?
Oh, there are various contingency plans. We'll be in touch.
Shouldn't all the West Coast ports be placed on high alert?
The authorities would tell us they're already on high alert. America is still officially neutral. They can't seem to be favoring one side.
But that's monstrous. Granted, we can't show them documentary proof that Axis agents are targeting those ports.
Don't worry. We'll be in touch with the relevant authorities.
Of course.
Have you got the 5,000?
The 5,000, I almost forgot.
Ah, thanks. We'll be in touch.
Of course. Oh, by the way, the midget was at the party last night. He said to tell you that Operation Goldfish was thriving.
Excellent.
Perhaps that's something I could work on? Operation Goldfish?
We'll let you know.
I have time now, if you'd care to bring me up to speed.
Not right now.
In that case, I'll be on my way.
I don't think so. Hands up. Just like in the movies.
I know hundreds of people in Manhattan. If I disappear, they'll want to know why.
Ah, they may never discover why.
You killed the Canadian, didn't you?
Why would we do that?
Because he had the plans which your own boys need to sabotage those ports.
Our own boys?
I don't know anyone called the Midget. There is no Operation Goldfish. I made it up.
You're far too inventive for your own good.
Sit yourself down, Mr. Coward. There are one or two things we would like to know.
We now have reliable eyewitness confirmation that German tanks crossed the border into French territory. In spite of the impregnability of the famous Maginot Line, German panzer divisions have found a way of bypassing the line entirely. And thus, the German army continues its inexorable invasion. Belgium, Holland, Luxembourg, and now France. Baseball now. The Dodgers on
Prince. Isn't it terrible? I haven't been able to work since I heard the news.
I know. Thank goodness Fanny and I found a home for the orphans in the Hudson Valley.
Gertie said they were going to California.
Oh, that's the British colony in Hollywood. They insist the poor little dears need oranges and sunshine. But Noel keeps reminding them first they need a roof over their heads.
Where is Noel?
I'm expecting him back any moment.
Alfred and Lynn saw him at Sardi's at lunchtime.
Sardi's? Are you sure?
They said he dashed out complaining of toothache.
He's still having bicuspid trouble.
I'm worried about him, Lorne. He looked tired and edgy last night.
He is tired and edgy. And resilient. Shall we order some tea?
That'd be lovely.
Ooh. Who is it?
Heating maintenance.
Heating maintenance?
Miss Lorraine, Mr. Coward's secretary?
Yes.
There's a problem with the radiator in Mr. Coward's room. Do you know when he'll be back?
I'm expecting him any minute now.
Would you have a telephone number where we might reach him?
I'm afraid not. What's the problem?
Maybe we'd better show you. Could you come with us to Mr. Coward's room?
I won't be a minute, Nasa. Perhaps you could ring room service.
Gladly, I adore room service.
I told Mr. Coward that radiator sounded dangerous, and he insisted it was a normal part of the New York landscape.
That explains it.
Explains what?
Why we haven't heard from him. We've been trying to attract his attention for the past 24 hours.
You said you were maintenance men.
We're with British intelligence, Mrs. Lorraine. We don't know how much you know.
Only that Mr. Coward has been working for British propaganda in Paris, and that he expected to be briefed for a new job when he arrived in New York.
I'm Willoughby. This is Conklin.
How do you do?
We're responsible for Mr. Coward's briefing.
But I thought he was with you.
With us?
He saw you yesterday, didn't he?
No. We have information that he met some people yesterday.
We're not sure who they were.
But it's doubtful they're on our side.
Is Noel in trouble?
He might be. Mrs. Lorraine, you presumably know him well.
He's my closest friend.
So you've never heard him express any disaffection for England, for the British war effort?
You must be mad.
Please tell us what you know, Mrs. Lorraine. If there is any reason why we should be sceptical of Mr. Coward's loyalty, we need to hear it now.
There's no reason to be sceptical. He is 100% devoted to his country.
Of course he is.
Would you mind if we had a look around?
Not at all.
These are his manuscripts?
Yes.
And his books. Anna Karenina, the Oxford Book of English Verse, Goodbye to Berlin. I imagine he's a great reader.
Voracious.
Does Mr. Coward keep a diary?
He carries a pocket diary when he remembers it. I have the main engagements book in my room.
I don't suppose you can read his handwriting.
I'm one of the few people who can.
This cigarette packet, could you translate what is scribbled here?
Charleston, Manhattan, 1st plus 4 plus a century, near Amsterdam.
Any idea what that means?
It looks like an itinerary.
Did Mr. Coward have plans to visit North Carolina?
He hasn't mentioned them.
What about Holland?
Unlikely, now that the Germans have invaded.
Hmm.
Did Mr. Coward have many German friends?
Noel's got involved with enemy agents, hasn't he?
Possibly. Does that surprise you?
Surprise me? Makes me sick with worry.
Mrs. Lorraine, it would be better for everyone if you didn't let on that anything was wrong.
You can rely on me.
If you think of anything else that you'd care to tell us, this is our number.
Do you have any idea where he might be?
To be perfectly honest...
We're as worried as you are.
Tell us more about Paris.
It's breathtaking in springtime. The chestnut trees, the cafe terraces. I can recommend the onion soup at Maxime's.
That's good to know, because we'll be in occupation over there any day now.
We'll get it back eventually, Mr. Simpson.
Your office in the Place de la Madeleine. Describe your operations.
Look, I told you yesterday. Most of it was a farce, a very dull farce.
The sticky confetti?
Precisely.
You expect us to believe that's all you got up to?
Very well. I'm getting bored, so I'll tell you the truth. We managed to crack every German code from Calais to Kiev. We infiltrated your Gestapo in Berlin with our own agents. It's only a matter of time before they betray you. We contaminated your sausage factories with a slow-releasing cyanide, which is due to wreak mass havoc in the next 6 months. I masterminded that caper myself.
If you continue to be flippant, we will shoot you.
I have a better idea. Why not turn me?
Turn you?
Run me as a double agent. It would take years before anybody cottoned on.
You are volunteering to work as a German spy.
I don't have much choice, do I?
You think we're nuts? Once you walk out of here, we'll never hear from you again.
In that case, you can shadow me to the end of the earth and assassinate me.
Very John Buchan, Mr. Coward.
I'm serious. I like a challenge. And maybe the world is right. Maybe England is well and truly finished. God knows her weather is tiresome, her cooking uninspired, her middle class is narrow-minded and puritanical.
Go on.
I'm still relatively young and boundlessly talented. I can earn a living anywhere there's a piano and a typewriter and a theatre. It doesn't really matter a jot to me who's running the Reichstag.
In other words, you won't wholeheartedly support us.
I'm an opportunist, Mr. Fortnum. Most men are. If you made it worth my while, I could support you.
I don't believe you.
Then you're a fool. I dine regularly with Mr. Churchill. I take tea at the palace. The British Navy is my second home. And I know everyone who's worth knowing.
Including a lot of Jews.
Ah, the Jews. A clever people, but somewhat too ubiquitous. Did you know that my dear friend Cole Porter could hardly place a song on Broadway until he adulterated his music with a lot of Jewish minor chords?
Jewish minor chords?
I could be useful to your cause in myriad ways. Gentlemen, think about it. What have you got to lose?
There's nothing like a hotel club sandwich.
Noel says that American food is baroque but inedible.
He's mad about corned beef. The first time I handed him a sandwich, all those years ago, in a studio packed with geniuses and posers, I knew we'd be friends.
Yes, he has a talent for friendship.
He's a wonderful listener. When did you first meet him?
Who?
Lorne. Are you all right?
Sorry, Nessa. It's this terrible news from France.
Must be a strain, being so far from home.
Oh, I'm enjoying New York, what I've seen of it.
It's a shame you couldn't have come over with Noel after the last war. 1921. It seemed the world was beginning afresh. We all descended on Manhattan, determined to do everything our parents hadn't done.
Say that again.
Manhattan in the 20s? It was the best of times?
Nessa, you must excuse me.
Anything I can do?
You've already done it.
Passport office, Willoughby.
This is Mrs. Lorraine. It's not an itinerary. The message on the cigarette packet, it's an address.
Go on.
It's a code game. We play at parties. Charleston, dance step, the 39 steps, number 39. Manhattan first, the year Noel first saw Manhattan, 1921. 21 plus 4, that makes 25, plus a century, 125, 125th Street. 39, 125th Street.
Ah.
Near Amsterdam.
Harlem.
Precisely.
Mrs. Lorraine, you are a very clever woman.
Mr. Willoughby, I don't know know what Noel's up to, but you have to believe me.
We know how valuable he is. We'll do everything we can.
You said the British Navy was your second home.
My mother's family were all Navy. I have friends of the Admiralty.
And you would be willing to use your contacts to help us?
Oh, for Christ's sake, Fortnum. Is it likely some admiral would brief a show business entertainer about secret naval maneuvers?
You'd be surprised what people let slip after a good dinner and a few cognacs.
Let's shoot him and get out of here.
Not until we determine how we might use him.
Mr. Simpson is correct. The top people regard me as a mere show business entertainer. I'm like their servant and their dogs. They don't mind what they say in front of me.
What you are, Mr. Coward, is a very good actor.
Your approbation warms my heart.
You've got my friend Fortnum here hypnotized, but I know instinctively when a guy is really sincere.
That must do wonders for your social life.
Stand up. Get your hands up.
Steady, Simpson. I haven't finished with him.
We have to get out of here.
5 more minutes.
Take as long as you need.
What about the New York media?
He means the Jews.
Convince us that you really intend to betray them.
We intend to shoot them all, every last yid.
Ah, that's the beauty of friendship. One can always make new ones if one is prepared to be flexible and broad-minded.
He's mocking us.
No, really. When you invade England, we shall have jolly Wiener Schnitzel parties at the Savoy. Gala nights of Wagner, Wagner, and more Wagner at Covent Garden. Luftwaffe festivals done in Kent.
You think this is some big joke?
On the contrary, all that bracing strength through joy, hiking and singing will do wonders for our phlegmatic island race.
Who is it?
Hell.
Evening maintenance.
Come back later.
Okay, sport, will do.
Let's get out of here.
Not yet. What do you know about Rockefeller Center?
They all laugh, but now they're fighting to get in.
What?
Sorry, I don't know anything, but I could find out.
What about the training camp in Ontario?
Sunset stunning, mosquitoes hellish.
Look, I don't care if you're the most famous playwright on 2 continents. One more wisecrack, and you're going to be the most famous dead playwright on 2 continents.
2 continents, my dear boy. You cut me to the quick.
Right. That's it.
Hands up. The police are surrounded.
Don't hurt me!
That depends entirely on you, sir. Okay, boys. Take them away.
Mr. Coward, we presume. Willoughby and Conklin, British Security Coordination.
May I see some identification, please?
Of course. Will this do?
Thank you.
Are you all right?
You got here in the nick of time. I was about to sign a 1,000-year contract with the Abwehr.
Mr. Coward, would you do us a favor?
Anything?
Phone that nice secretary of yours. Tell her you're alive and well.
Apart from being debriefed by us.
How delightful.
Ho, ho, ho. Ha, ha, ha. He, he. You think the laugh's on me? They all laughed at Rockefeller Center, now they're fighting to get in. They all laughed at Whitney and his cotton gin. They all laughed at Fulton and his steamboat, Hershey and his chocolate bar. Ford and his Lizzie kept the laughers busy, that's how people are. They laughed at me.
Whiskey?
Thanks.
How exactly did those scoundrels contact you?
A message was waiting for me at the St. Regis when I arrived. I assumed it was from you.
So you raced up to the Hotel Desiree in Harlem, where they rent rooms by the hour.
Look, my first London briefing was in a building round the back of Victoria Station, just as shabby as the Hotel Desiree.
And Mr. Fortnum and Mr. Simpson instantly convinced you that they were working for British intelligence.
They were fiendishly plausible, a toothy Englishman and a red-faced American. By the way, why didn't you contact me?
We did. The radiator in room 603.
The radiator?
We made sure it was blazing when you checked in. We assumed you'd notify housekeeping.
Had you done so, Conklin and I would have turned up in our smartest janitorial overalls.
British pragmatism. My secretary and I opened the windows.
I must say we were puzzled that you dropped your bags and entered into immediate negotiation with the enemy.
Surely you never suspected that I'd really...
We're trained to suspect everything. Now, your encounters with Fortnum and Simpson. What did you tell them?
They asked me about Paris. I told them the truth, that I'd been bored and ineffectual.
Good.
What about codes?
I tried to get them to use my own code. They found it impenetrable.
Excellent. More whiskey?
No, thanks. What about the Canadian? They claimed he was a double agent.
The Canadian has always been on our side. He had documentary evidence of an enemy sabotage scheme.
So Fortnum and Simpson were hoping I would lure them to the Canadian.
That was the plan. Last night, after he left me in that deserted street, they abducted him, recovered the sabotage scheme, murdered him, and placed that report in the newspaper about the accident to make me believe that he'd been killed by enemy agents.
Not quite.
What have I missed out?
It might be better if we allow our newest recruit to explain.
Jonathan. Hello, Mr. Coward.
How in the world did you escape?
These gentlemen managed to abduct me first.
Pull up a chair, Jonathan.
Whiskey?
If you want me to be coherent, you better make it a ginger ale.
So that's really your name?
Jonathan Smith. Most of what I told you on board the ship was true.
Merely a stage-struck playwright.
I'm studying architecture at McGill University. I was so busy looking at buildings, I only half noticed there was a war brewing.
You had better start in Prague.
Right, Prague. I bought this nifty Burberry raincoat in London. Some weeks later, I was in a bar in Prague reading the International Herald Tribune, and I remember looking up and noticing there was this other guy in the bar, about my height, with exactly the same coat.
Reading the International Herald Tribune?
How did you know?
I once had a play on a balcony in the south of France with two people who'd been married to each other, honeymooning in adjoining suites.
Well, then, you won't be surprised when I tell you that about 10 minutes later...
A man in a trilby hat limped into the bar, ordered a cognac, downed it in one gulp, then limped out, having deftly handed you a sealed envelope.
It was a woman, a shapely redhead. We drank coffee. She offered to show me Prague, then vanished out of my life toward the ladies' room. I discovered the sealed envelope in my pocket hours later when I returned to my hotel.
Fortunately, the mysterious redhead had planted her secret documents on a resourceful young man.
A resourceful young man with only tourist German. My Berlitz phrasebook was no help at all.
Did you contact the British embassy?
I tried to. That's when I realized that I was being followed. I train-hopped my way across Europe, got myself to Genoa, booked my passage home on the SS Washington. When I saw your name on the passenger list, I decided to approach you.
How did you know that I was working for intelligence?
I didn't. But you are one of the most famous Englishmen in the world. I assumed you would be able to direct me to the right people.
You mentioned the Baker Street Irregulars.
I made that up. You know, Sherlock Holmes.
It happens to be one of the code names for our organization.
You're kidding. Isn't that a bit obvious?
One day, Mr. Smith, when this wretched war is over, you and I will sit down and tackle this vexed question of codes.
I shall look forward to that, Mr. Coward.
Can you bear to answer one more question?
Of course.
Why didn't you hand over the document in the street last night?
A car went past while we were talking. I recognized one of the men from the ship. In fact, he was at your table in the dining room.
The Scandinavian diplomats.
All but one were legitimate. The man Jonathan spotted is a well-known double agent.
Duplicity at every turn. Tiresome, but undeniably compelling.
May I have that whiskey now?
Tell you what. If my colleagues have finished with this, there's always food and drink galore at Nessa McMahon's.
No! Darling, how's the famous tooth?
Crowned into submission, Nessa. I never wish to speak of it again.
I see you found your tall young man from last night.
We are bumped into each other at Rockefeller Center.
Not wasting any time getting to know our favorite Ziegfeld girl.
So I see. Well, good luck to him. He's been working rather hard.
You've heard about France.
Just now on my way here, all our deepest fears seem to be coming true.
Gertie wants you to appear at the Allied Relief Ball next week.
Only if she says yes to Moss's play. Is Lorne here?
She was in the bathroom with Alec. He was showing her how we used to manufacture gin in the
tub. No!
There she is.
Lorne, darling.
How long have you been here? I thought I'd never see you again.
Keep smiling, don't let on. Now, have we found a residence for the dear little tots?
It's looking hopeful.
Perhaps we can inspect it tomorrow.
A message from Washington. You're invited to dinner at the White House tomorrow at 7.
Splendid.
The White House? Be sure to eat a hearty lunch. Harpo says the Roosevelts are terrific, but the food is vile.
I'm not going for the food, Nessa.
You will be careful, Noel.
I promise you, Lorne, if the house looks the least off-white, I shall scream the place down.
Mr. Coward, welcome to the inner sanctum.
Mr. President.
Yeah, pull up a chair. Now, the White House is officially dry. No liquor allowed anywhere on the premises. So what you see me doing here...
A biochemical experiment.
Yes, that's it, yes. So if I happen to invent a martini or a whiskey sour in the course of my experimentation, we'll phone Harry Luce and get him to publish the formula in life.
An excellent plan.
How long have you been in the States?
Only a few days. I haven't been out of New York until now.
What are they saying in New York?
My friends are devastated by the news from France.
So are we all. I imagine you're relieved to have Mr. Churchill in charge?
Immensely relieved.
Yes, he has guts, imagination, integrity, humor. My fellow citizens tend to be suspicious of humor in their leaders, but to me it indicates a sense of balance in a man.
Quite so.
God knows we could all do with a little balance. Have you been reading the papers?
The Hearst press is somewhat alarming.
Somewhat alarming, gosh. British understatement. What do they claim, that 75% of the American people say no to a European war?
This morning it was 84%.
That's where my countrymen are confused, Mr. Coward. Confused and misguided, and I have to tread very carefully.
I know that, sir. But this war is different. A rare and genuine conflict of ultimate values.
Yes, now we understand that, and Mr. Churchill understands. After all, he is half American, but this is a huge country with people of German, Italian, Irish ancestry, people with no relationship to your country, or worse, with open hostility towards it.
Do you think you can convince them?
Well, I mustn't be impatient or cavalier. Come November, there may be an implacable isolationist sitting in this chair.
My country may be running out of time.
Have a cheese straw.
Thank you.
That song of yours, Mad Dogs and Englishmen. Mrs. Roosevelt and I love that song.
I wrote it in Indochina. Bumping along in a car between Hanoi and Tonkin, there wasn't an Englishman in sight.
That's wonderful. Will you sing it for us after dinner?
Of course.
How likely is it, do you think, that the Germans could invade England?
That will never happen.
You're very confident.
That's how I feel.
Well, your confidence does you credit. But how much of it is based on logic and how much on blind faith?
It's nothing to do with logic or faith. It's a confidence that I happen to share with 40 million of my fellow countrymen. We know full well that our defenses are inadequate, our air force outnumbered. We are expecting to have a bad time. But we also know beyond logic and reason that we will not be beaten.
Well, if that isn't blind faith, I should like to know what is.
Call it what you like, Mr. President, but the best of us, and that is a great many of us, will never allow ourselves to be enslaved.
Here, try one of these.
Thank you. One of the most impeccable biochemical experiments I've ever tasted.
To Great Britain.
Great Britain.
Mad dogs and Englishmen go out in the midday sun. The Japanese don't care to, the Chinese wouldn't dare to. Hindus and Argentines sleep firmly from 12 to 1. But Englishmen deter star siesta. In the Philippines, they have lovely screens to protect you from the glare. In the Malay states, there are hats like plates which the Britishers won't wear. At 12 noon, the natives swoon and no further work is done. But mad dogs and Englishmen go out in the midday, 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 out in the midday sun.
Now that I'm actually going home, I realize how much I'll miss New York.
Tell everyone I'll be seeing them very soon.
Your mother won't be pleased you're not with me.
Mother adores secrets. Tell her that you can't say why I'm staying on, that it's thrillingly clandestine.
That will tear her nerves to shreds.
You're right. Improvise something banal.
I don't suppose you can give me a hint of what you're about to get up to?
I won't be hiding emeralds in my navel like Mata Hari.
What a disappointment.
If anyone needs to know, I'm crossing the country by train, New York to L.A., soaking up public opinion like a sponge.
Are you really serious about not writing anything for the duration?
What do you think?
I think that if you stop writing, that will be a source of satisfaction to the enemy.
You may be ever so slightly exaggerating my importance, darling.
A nation defines itself by its constitution, but it nourishes its spirit by what it sings and laughs and cries about.
You're becoming sententious in your old age. Come on, there's your clipper.
Take care of yourself, Noel.
You too, Lorne. Send England all my love.
London Pride has been handed down to us. London Pride is a flower that's free. London Pride means our own dear town to us, and our pride it forever will be.
On December the 7th, 1941, the Japanese attacked the American fleet at Pearl Harbor, and the United States formally entered the war. In addition to his work for British intelligence, Noel Coward spent the war years giving concert tours across the world. He also wrote, co-directed and starred in the patriotic film In Which We Serve, wrote the now classic comedy Blithe Spirit, and composed many life-enhancing songs.
In our city darkened now, street and square and crescent, we can feel our living past in our shadowed present. Ghosts beside our starlit Thames, who lived and loved and died, keep throughout the ages London Pride.
In Blithe Spy by Marcy Cahan, Malcolm Sinclair was Noel Coward, and Eleanor Braun, Lorne Lorraine. Elizabeth McGovern played Nasa McMain, Adam Sims, Jonathan Smith, Bob Sherman, Franklin D. Roosevelt, Ian Masters, Fortnum, Kerry Shale, Simpson, Peter Marinker, Willoughby, and Jared McDermott, Conklin. Blithe Spy was directed by Gordon House.
Every blitz your resistance toughening, from the writ to the anchor and crown, nothing ever could override the pride of London town.